With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome back to Ironcast. The Ginger Pele is here once again. I'm Chris Skull, and joining us, without doubt, for me, one of the greatest West Ham United related raconteurs in history.
Raconteurs. What's that?
Yeah, big word. I'm looking forward to this. Welcome, Tony Gale.
Cheers, Chris. Cheers, Ginge.
Morning, mate. It's going to be a good one, this.
You've got a book out called That's Entertainment.
Yeah.
Well, and I've just flicked through it.
Football's supposed to be entertainment. And my life after that's been entertainment as well. So I thought it was a great title. They said that was a title after reading it. Not my choice, but I think it's good.
Oh, what was your choice?
Oh, they went with all the normal crap, didn't they? Gal Force 6, Gal Force and all that sort of stuff. But a bit of Paul Weller on the front, that's good, isn't
nice.
It?
Nice.
Of all your ex-teammates, I think the best autobiography title goes to Mark Ward, From Left Wing to H-Wing. Very good.
B-Wing.
Oh, B-Wing.
Was it B-Wing? There you go.
Well, but younger fans would know you best, I would say, as a commentator of the modern era. And obviously, you've got a lot of West Ham allegiance. And I can't help but notice you always seem to get West Ham games to commentate on. In an era when most commentators don't get the teams they're affiliated with, how have you managed it?
If it ain't West Ham, it's Fulham. So I tend to get the two. And it's quite good that they don't coincide with each other very often on home matches. But the producer is very kind. In the first days when I was doing it, Match Choice, Football Choice or whatever it's called, and PLP, it goes around the world. So you was going up to Old Trafford, Anfields. But then they started to regionalise it in the last 5-7 years. And I've tended to get a lot of West Ham games, which I love doing. I absolutely love it. But I still get coated by the West Ham fans. Oh, you don't like us. You don't like us.
That's the thing. You've done it for so long. It must be hard not to show a bit of allegiance to West Ham when you do it. Do you find it hard?
Particularly when we're losing, you know. And that's the one that does your head in, isn't it? You know, you think you want to make the changes yourself, didn't you? Like we all do when we're sitting in the press box or supporting the club or whatever. But it's been brilliant. Last couple of seasons has been terrific, hasn't it?
Oh, what a treat. It's funny you say West Ham fans kind of criticise you for appearing to be anti-West Ham. I listen to your commentary and think, oh, Tony, you're pushing it a bit here. You're being too pro-West Ham, if anything.
And the worst one is, Chris, when you go, we, and you think, oh, no.
I do it all the time. I do it. I do a little bit now for the radio, bits and bobs, and I always say us or the gaffer.
I'm
doing it like meant to be impartial, you know. I think that's playing for West Ham. Like you'll probably say it yourself. As soon as you're involved with the club, you feel like
you want to like whoop, rewind.
Yeah.
I was just flicking through the book. You have such nice things to say about commentating legends like Brian Moore, like Martin Tyler. Your foreword is by Jonathan Pierce. You have worked with so many commentating like royalty. It's been what a career.
Well, Jonathan was my mentor because first of all, you do radio like Ginger's doing now, and then I was doing that for 7 years. So we did 7 years, Capital Gold. So I was doing loads of West Ham games because Capital Gold was London. Mm. But it was Arsenal and Chelsea that were in the Champions League at the time. So we were traveling all over the world. And I'd done every England international for 7 years and every final from the amateur final through to the World Cup final with Jonathan, alongside Jonathan. And he told me when to basically, like Ginger's finding out now, if you're on radio, you got to shut up at a certain time when the ball's getting near the penalty area and things like that. And but radio was, Jonathan always said, painting pictures. You got to paint pictures. You know, if it's a crap game, you still have to make it up because you got to keep people on air. But then when the transformation came to TV, you got to let it breathe because the pictures are showing what's happened. And you know, you have to know when to cut off, and it does my head in when I hear some of the co-commentators talking too much. Shut up.
I think when you're doing it, I think when you're doing it, you feel like you've got to, though, isn't it? But like you say, I don't think I'll ever progress to television, to be honest, with a face like mine. Tone's obviously face for radio. So, it's, you know,
you've
done it for so long. It's, you know, it's not easy. And was it a natural progression, Tone? Did you ever think about coaching, or was it always good to go into the press?
I thought about coaching. I finished, I went from Blackburn to Crystal Palace. That don't hardly sort of get a mention, really, but I broke my ankle like 36 years of age. So, spent the whole season, played 3 games for Palace, and then I had to pack it in. Took a bit of insurance money, but then Dev rung me up, Alan Devonshire, would I come and play a bit of non-league? So I was doing a little bit of radio work, and I thought, oh, that'd do. So I thought, went down there, and I thought, I said to Dev, no, I can't do this. Like, Premier, you know, it's me and Prem, I can't do this. Like, people are going to kick lumps out of me, even though I was a centre-back.
Yeah.
But you get so much respect out of people out of non-league, it's unbelievable. You know, and it went the other way, and I loved it. Did it for 15 months with him. And then John, and I got a sort of few offerings of lower league management, but I've got to be honest, I got twice as much doing the radio than I did if I'd have taken over at a low level. And if you get the wrong club, like a couple of my ex-teammates have done, if you get the wrong club first time in your career, you're going to management. That's it. If you mess it up, you ain't going to get another chance. But I'm glad I stayed with the radio. My first gig was France 98. Brilliant.
I spoke to Jonathan Pearce the other week, and he told me this story that when you were recording the commentary for France 98, he told me the story. It was a World Cup, I'm sure, and you had a feed from the stadium that had the crowd noise, and the feed from the stadium, the crowd noise, was slightly ahead of the pictures.
Yeah.
And it led to you making a few psychic predictions because...
Oh, yeah.
Instead, you were right.
You came across like the world's greatest co-cop.
Yeah, and Pearcey used to say to me, no, you've got to do it. Like, don't forget there's a delay and everything. I go, wouldn't surprise me if they score you.
Brilliant. Looks like, yeah.
You and Jonathan Pearce in the 90s, Capital Gold especially, this is in the days before kind of internet and streams, you were this is how most West Ham fans, especially if West Ham were away from home, would hear about the games. And it was a really golden era, that kind of Capital Gold.
Oh, unbelievable. And, you know, my dad was a London taxi driver. So really, I had the taxi driving nation following me on Capital Gold, because Capital Gold was the biggest station in London. But a commercial station, that is, you know, obviously you had the BBC and everything, but it weren't till TalkSport came into the equation that the rights came up, blew all the rights issues out the water, and then I transferred over to TV. But the radio was by far my best, and, you know, that's where my heart is with the radio.
I do it occasionally, not on Tony's level, but I think you can sort of get your point across better on the radio as well. I think we spoke about it before. I think you can... Because it's your opinion and you're seeing what you're seeing, and you get more chance to speak, and you can get it across better on the radio as well. So,
and you could also tell a few fibs, couldn't you?
Yeah.
If Pearcey was sitting there like, and he was going, oh, what a great player this Fabregas is, and I was going, nah, he's, I'm just saying like that, you know, like doing your facial expressions across to each other, you know, and he's going, ham him up. But I loved it.
Yeah, and it's not just radio. Obviously, you're known for hosting live events, a fantastic after dinner speaker, and for many years you've been doing live Q&As with West Ham legends from all eras. And I wondered, you must have done hundreds, if not thousands, of these after dinner events. Who's your favourite person to do a Q&A with? Who are the top ones you love doing? That always...
Blimey. Well, he's just started, Ginger. I mean, he's good. I'll tell you, he's good. And I've just done some with Coley as well, Colton. Yeah, yeah. And Colton's terrific. And seeing Colton starting out on telly, and like Colton's, any advice, Tone? Be yourself, Colton.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure that's great advice to Colton.
No, but it is, isn't it? It is. It's like, you know, you don't want to try and be someone. And he's got such a lovely way about him, as has Ginge, when he's doing the radio. So just be yourself. And I'll watch Colton his first one, it made me laugh when he was on BT with Joey Cole.
Yeah.
And I think, I want him to do so well. And I think, Colton, you know, don't say this, don't say that. Like, you know, looking at him. And I was telling you, Ginge, when I, and he's talking about Declan Rice. So the lady who was doing it, she says, oh, about Declan Rice, you know, what does he do for West Ham, Colton? And he starts off really well, doesn't he? And I'm thinking, don't do any long words, Colton. Please don't do any long words. So he starts off, he goes, oh, yeah, he comes in, gets the ball off the back four, gets on the half turn a little bit better. Distribution is good, provides a great screen in front of the centre-backs, and then tries to put the long word in. He said, in fact, he's everything that's detrimental to West Ham. Oh, no instrumental.
Oh, Coley. One of my favourites. I love it. But I'll say about it, I've probably done 5 or 6, yeah, probably a few more. He makes it so easy. Like, we say how good he is. You do, Tone. I've never actually said it yet. They're such good nights. And I think with me and Coley coming in, I think they're good. Like I said, Tony helps us out, unbelievable. But I think they're good for the fans, because I don't think there's a lot of, not for any choice, any fault of the current players, sort of, no fault of theirs. There's no sort of interaction with fans and players as there used to be. You know, Tony more probably than me. We used to be out and about, so you could chat to fans. So the nights Tony does, they're brilliant, because fans actually get to ask us questions and we can tell stories. And for whatever reason, you know, they don't really get that with the current.
And out of the current crop, him and Colton, you know, have gone and done it, and they realise that, you know, that you've got to go out there to the fans. You've got to get out there. You've got to associate with the fans, because we are fans.
Yeah,
as
exactly.
Well.
Yeah.
You know, and we're just reporting on the game. But when you get out there with them, I mean, it's brilliant. And they're doing terrific, the pair of them.
Yeah. Like we said, you've done almost every major kind of West Ham player. But I wondered, is there any kind of Q&A that you haven't done with an ex-West Ham? Is there one player that you wish you could have done a live event with that you never got the chance to?
God, what a good question that is, Chris. I did one recently, actually, at a pub that me and Ginge frequent quite a bit. The Dog and Pickle.
It's more of a restaurant.
I'll give him a plug here, the Dog and Pickle. Well, he won't like us calling it a pub, will he? It's a pub restaurant.
It's a restaurant.
Gastro. Yeah, that's lovely. And I done Gaza. Always, you know, I played against Gaza and all that. And I thought, oh no, like, I hope he don't start misbehaving. But then when I sat down with him, I went, look, you're doing this, you're doing that. You know what he's like, Paul. He's a little bit, you know, switchy and everything. But he was terrific. Absolutely. What a lovely bloke. Yeah.
Have you done any that you thought, like, they were quiet when you were playing with them, or ex-players, but you got them in front of the mic and taking questions and you speaking to them, they came out with something different. They were a bit livelier than you thought they were going to be.
I've had so many nervous ones.
Have you?
You know, but you're like, you know, I remember doing Jack Collison. I said, you got any funny stories, Jack? And he went, no. Yeah, got one. And he went, no. But another great lad. But then you don't want funny stories all the time. They want insight. And Jack was coaching with the juniors at the time.
Yeah.
So they want a little bit of insight into the coaching streams and things like that. And Colton, what he's doing, I don't know what he's doing, is he? Mentoring. You know, but and Coley's got some good stories. And like I tend to say to him, right, you've got to finish that with a punchline. And now he's starting to get that in as well. It's really good.
Yeah.
And they're quite naturals, a pair of them.
Yeah.
They'd be doing it together. They'd be blowing me out. So yeah.
Couldn't do it without you. Said it.
Well, let's wind the clock right back, long before after dinners, like right at the very start of your career. 16 years old playing for Fulham. And you already had a bit of a West Ham connection there, because obviously Bobby Moore's in the team. You're basically there to kind of replace him. You were the understudy.
Yeah. I mean, just watching him train every day. I mean, I know your hero. Was at the time Ginge, but Bobby was my hero, you know, and like having won the World Cup, came over from West Ham, played in the 75 final, and then I'm there the next season after that. I'm just sort of going around as a junior, in and around it, training in the summer, then your apprentice. And then after Bobby, we signed George Best and Rodney Marsh. And you think, wow. And you think this is going to be the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But it was only like for 18 months, you know, that they were there. But,
and also, you're not in the top division, are you? Then?
No, it was like, in the Division 2, the Championship. Yeah. We was in the Championship. But it was like a travelling circus. They go pre-season trips, you know, all of a sudden, because they, you know, get a few quid off of different people to go over to Scandinavia, playing five-a-side tournaments, a quick game over here, quick game over there. And we were just going everywhere. And as apprentices, we were taking the skips. Yeah. On the pitch, I learnt a lot. And I learned a lot off the pitch.
I didn't know whether to start you off on the stories off the pitch, because I think they'd probably be longer than the football stories. But going back to Bobby, do you remember you remember any like words you had with him or any advice he could give he gave you or just
not really because I tend to, although I've got a lot to say for myself now, I didn't then because I was a 17-year-old kid, you know, as an apprentice, and so you speak when spoken to. But what happened was the guy who was in charge of the apprentices realised I was going to be the next one up, the step up, and they'd already had that planned for me. So Bob lived in East London, I lived in West London, so he had to go home my way. And now and again, when he had treatment in the afternoon, he'd say, you can go home earlier today, Bobby's going to give you a lift. Oh, and I was like, wow. Oh, you know, Yellow Jag, you know, like getting a Yellow Jag, Betamax cassette, Tom Jones records in the car, going along like, you know, opening the window. So I was like pooping myself. I didn't want to talk to him, you know, I just sit there. And he said, oh, you like this record? You like that record? What you got to do, you know, in training? You do this, you do that. And I'm thinking, I hope someone recognises me. Please stop at the lights. Please stop at the lights. But I used to get him to drop me off at Looper Street, where it was my housing estate, council estate. And all my mates who were sort of out of work at the time, I knew where they hung about around this time.
Oh, drop us here.
Drop us here. I'll get out.
Brilliant.
And they'd all go, it's Bobby Moore there, isn't it? Bobby didn't
see you in the morning,
it.
Bob.
See
you. Cheers, mate.
Never spoke all the way to him. Brilliant. But all you got to do, and he'll tell you, when you're around good players, just look, learn, listen.
Yeah. What about you? So when you eventually get in the first team, they give you his number 6 shirt. Yeah. Talk about pressure.
I'll tell you what, though. I don't know, you know, with the football kits now, like it's like footballing currency, isn't it? Oh, can you get me a signed shirt? Can you get me a match shirt? Can you get this? Can you get me that? Well, you only had 2 shirts in a season. You had a short sleeve and a long sleeve. And being an apprentice, can you imagine if I'd have kept Bobby's last shirt when he signed off away at Blackburn and Georgie Best's last shirt and Rodney Marsh's? Do you know what they've done? They give them the local teams. Yeah, you know, like
what,
I remember the Adidas strip.
Yeah.
So they used to go, oh, that's all done with. Because it wasn't like that then, was it?
Course,
the signed shirt and everything like that. But, oh, can you imagine it? But I kept that.
You could have had, eh?
Yeah, but that was the 6 shirt I took over from Bob. The 6,
And talk about different times. There's a bit in the book you mentioned when you're an apprentice and they say to you, right, Tony, today you've got to clean the floodlights.
Oh, yeah, that was, we had a, well, it's a bit of a Torrey Tower. Our groundsman who was in charge of the apprentices, he was a bit of a boy, and he used to be a bit of a bully. So if the manager had really found out, HR would have had a field day with him now.
Was there HR then?
Oh, I was going to say. Do you know what? It's not that. I was probably the last to do the old YTS, I think. And we were doing stuff like that. Ninian Park, Cardiff, sweeping the stadiums and floodlights and stuff. Yeah.
Cleaning, so the
not,
cars.
Not, cleaning the cars.
Yeah, cleaning the cars in the stand.
My job was, I remember it, my job was cleaning the first team dressing room, staff boots, and sweeping like one of the terraces.
That's it, yeah.
And then the manager would have to come round and check it. And if it wasn't good enough, he'd keep you there, keep doing it till the manager, like the youth team manager, would go, Colin Pascoe it was. Yeah, that's all right, you can go home now.
We used to paint the barriers. You know the barriers we used to stand on?
Stuff.
We used to have to paint the barriers. And yet, like on a Saturday, sometimes, like if the people hadn't been in to clear the ground up, you had to get all the litter.
Get all the rubbish out,
and sweep it all down the bottom. So we had this good idea one day. Tony Mooney, who still is a mate of mine, apprentice. So what we do, we'll burn it. Well, we nearly set the place
set,
on fire.
Set the stadium on fire.
Do you look at the kids these days, like the youth team, and think, oh, you don't know how lucky you've got? I think it'd annoy me.
I don't think that, but I think they would be shocked if they went back. I probably had it good compared to Tone. If they went back to sort of an era of Tone's on mine, they would be shocked what we were doing.
I wouldn't swap a minute.
No,
because it teaches you how to be grateful.
Yeah.
You know, when you do it, eventually get in the first team and you're earning a few quid. Like they're earning bundles now, the boys, but just a little bit of grounding here and there. You know, they're 16, 17 now, and 17 when they're getting their cars and their first car. Mine was a full Capri, and that was good then.
Mine was a Peugeot 309.
They're probably getting Bentleys now, Jim.
mine was a Peugeot 309, true story. The body was like maroon colour and the boot was white because I was living in Newport and someone put the back window for them and I couldn't afford to get a new one, so I just went to the scrap you and got
well,
a white
Capri
one.
Capri was yellow with a black sunroof, like, and it had really wind it open like that, you know.
I could see the boys in that now, to be
and honest. I took it in first day. I thought I was the nuts. I took it in the first day and where we trained at the Bank of England, lovely sports ground. So you come out the exit and there was nothing to the right, it was a dead end, but so it was the only traffic coming from the left. So, like, come out like that, someone's come from the dead end, didn't they? I've gone right into the side of them. Two police cadets. How's your luck?
Brilliant.
You've watched the Lionesses' incredible run to the FIFA Women's World Cup final, and from October, they will be on your doorstep, taking on the Hammers. Dagenham is the place to be this season, as our squad, filled with homegrown stars and world-class players such as Australia goalkeeper Mackenzie Arnold, will come up against the current crop of Lionesses and FIFA World Cup players week in, week out. With more World Cup players than any other league, the WSL is the place to watch the best in the world. Season tickets for the new campaign start from as little as £4 per game. And with very little crossover with the men's game, you can support both Iron Sides this season. Buy now at eticketing.co.uk/WHUFC.
So 1984, you finally joined West Ham. I wondered, yours went to a tribunal, didn't it?
Yeah.
And you had a choice of West Ham or Chelsea too.
Yeah, came knocking on the door same day, because it was just when it weren't freedom of contract, but Fulham hadn't realised my contract had run out. See how stupid it is.
I was going to say.
So all of a sudden, if they don't make me an offer of better wages than what I was on, I'd have become a free transfer. So it went right to the last moment. Then they realised and they started making me an offer better than, you know, what I already had. But I made my mind up, because we missed promotion the season before I left. Just missed out on the last day against Derby County. And then the next year, it was like all regrouping. And I was 24, played about 300 and odd games. And I thought, I ain't hanging about for another team to be done. You know what I mean? Yeah. So then I got away, and it was a real choice, Chelsea or West Ham. And it was the manager that turned me head, John Lyle. You know, wow. It was brilliant. And Chelsea was on my doorstep. My family were Chelsea fans. Yeah. And I went to West Ham.
Would you have had an agent back then, Tom?
No, I didn't.
Transfers back then, would it all been done family, was it, I suppose?
Some people had agents, Ginge, but no, I didn't. It probably cost me a few quid. I wish I did.
Probably better off not.
Talk about naive, old man, what you done?
Whenever I read West Ham football autobiographies from your era, everyone says John Lyle was a tough negotiator. Yeah. Was that your experience? He treated it like it was his own money.
Oh, I signed big contracts. I can't remember what it was about 600 quid a week at the time, I think. Signed me contract. And he went, if you start well in the first couple of weeks, come and see me. You know, have a good pre-season, come and see me, and we'll up it, you know. So signed me 3-year contract. Soppy as a sack load, you know, I've signed it. Anyway, I started well. Good pre-season, getting all these rave reviews. Started well season. I thought, right, time to knock on the door.
I know what's coming here.
Picked on a Friday, didn't I? So team sheet's gone up. We're going to Man United. It's knocked on the door. And I went, John, I want to have a word about my contract. Not on a Friday, son. Really? You don't do it day before a game. I've gone, oh, all right. He said, come see me Monday. I went up to United, gave a goal away, bad back pass.
Worst game of your life.
And I thought, worst game. I thought, I've still got to front it out. I'm going to knock on the door. I knocked on the door and he went, you want to take a wage decrease?
Would that have been the norm then? Like the player would go in, speak to the manager about money and stuff like that?
You just knocked on the door, go and have a word. And, well, John ran the whole club.
And then he would say, yes, you can have a deal, no, you can't.
He would be the one who said yes or no or whatever. He ran it from top to bottom. Wow. He was some man. I wish you guys all met him, you know. Yeah. He was some man.
Wow. And then you get put with Alvin Martin as roommate.
Yeah, Alvin, yeah. I know where you're going.
There's a story in the book.
You speed reader.
About the toothpaste.
Well, Alvin was different to me. We're a good partnership, you know, really good partnership, good friends. So we were rooming together. And but he was one of those who sort of got up really early in the morning and went to bed early at night. And I was like, go to bed, watch it till the TV finished, you know, watch every film under the sun and get up late. So he said, he used to get under the covers like that while I was watching the telly. And he said, I'm going to get up in the morning. I'll go down for breakfast. He used to have his breakfast. He used to do it all right, Alvin. Drew used to drive me mad. So I said, okay, mate, go on, go down for breakfast. But I said, when you're coming, creep in, like, you know, creep back in. Don't wake me up, because I'll still be in bed at 10:30, you know. So he come back in and he's been for a walk. He like, does his walk and all that, get some fresh air, you know, proper pro, you know. Yeah. So and then he come in and he goes, oh, all right, I'm all right, mate. I'm awake. Don't worry. Yeah, come in. Like, you know,
I wasn't, but I am now.
I am now. So anyway, he walks in. He went, oh, yeah. I said, good walk. Yeah, yeah, good breakfast, mate. He said, yeah. I said, how's everything? He went, all right. He said, but I've been in the bathroom. He said, I've been using your toothpaste. I couldn't get a lather. And I went, my toothpaste? You couldn't get a lather? He said, the thing with the applicator on the end of it. I went, that's my hemorrhoid cream.
Oh, Alvin. And that might explain a lot what Alvin's like now, to be honest.
He talks out of his backside, yeah. Nah, it was funny. Yeah. Of course I told the lads, didn't I?
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, that boys of 86, famous, the highest league position West Ham have ever attained. What a team it was. And I just wanted to call out Alan Devonshire. You mentioned him in the book, and everyone from that era says what a player he was. I just find it unbelievable. He was like basically in a factory one day and playing for West Ham the next. Incredible. How does a talent like that get missed?
He was a Hoover factory, and he used to drive one of them things, you know, the forklift driver. And it's so funny that he was a forklift driver but never passed his driving test and still hasn't to this day.
Well, doesn't drive. Driving. Oh, right.
Yeah, but no, forklift driving, right. But couldn't drive a car.
Yeah.
And so and still can't now.
Yeah, no, still can't now. I was his chauffeur. I think he owes me about 24 grand in petrol money picking him up. But and he's a lazy so-and-so, but he's like one of my best pals, you know. But he was genuinely world-class, because you play against players and you play with players and you think you could give him a ball in any situation. And he had that horrible cruciate injury and he came back and he was still the best player in our team when, you know, when operations for cruciates weren't too clever and he couldn't fully flex his knee.
What age was he when he did that?
Oh, Dev would have been about 27, something like that. And then he came back and honestly, people would back off him and he would beat players and he hadn't gone past them because they were backing off and they were so afraid. He could go right, he could go left, he could play off the strikers. And he was just so down to earth, He liked to bet. Yeah, he likes himself a bit. He had long hair.
Iconic look.
He looked like D'Artagnan,
didn't
he?
If you were driving him, you must have some stories on him.
Dev.
None that we can probably say.
But he looked like, he tried to look like a film star and everything. But you want to see the state of him now. He's put on weight. He's gone bald.
I didn't recognise him. First time I saw him, I didn't recognise him. Yeah.
Because if I do functions like I do with Ginge, if I'm doing it with Dev, I say, hey, everyone, this is Alan Devonshire's granddad.
Speaking of iconic looks to that mid-80s West Ham team, Frank McAvennie, platinum blonde. But you mentioned in the book that one day you discovered he was another famous West Ham ginger player because of an old sticker book.
Yeah, and when he went in the shower, we checked him downstairs.
That's all you could tell now.
We didn't have, no one had the phones or, you know, a little bit of CFAX or teletext. You're too young, you two, aren't you? But when we saw McAvennie, we thought, who's he? You know, couldn't even pronounce his name, McAvennie. You know, McAbelly, I call him now because he's put a bit of weight on. But so he signed. And the only way you could sort of gain a bit of information about a Scottish player was through Panini sticker books. And I don't know if you're too old, young for that.
Familiar, yeah.
Anyway, so all the books, was all the Premier League, you've got all your stickers, and at the back it was Glasgow Rangers, Glasgow Celtic, and some starlets, some, you know, up-and-comings. And Frank was in the St Mirren one, black and white strip like this. And we've had a look, and he's got ginger hair, his teeth are a bit manky, like, you know, can't wait to give him some stick. And he turns up the first day, he's got blonde hair, cap teeth, all everything. He looked like Shergar, yeah. So we knew that, from the first time he played, we knew we had a player. And I'll tell you, what a bloke. What a bloke. You've met him a few times, haven't you? You'd love to have played. Ginge, you'd either be great in our team at all.
You could do a podcast on him. Oh, definitely. We'll get
just an episode.
Yeah, you might need an interpreter in the corner. Or
So much has been written and said about that Boys of 86 team. But I wondered, for younger fans, if you were going to tell a younger fan to go watch the highlights from a single game to understand what that team was about, what game would you say go watch the highlights from?
We just came back live on the telly and we played Man United at home. And they were up the top. Jasper Olsen, Mark Hughes, Brian Robson, Norman Whiteside, Paul McGrath. Just rattle all the names off, couldn't you? And we played them at home. And it was live, and Saint and Greavesy were their little double act on the Sunday football. And we played them live and we beat them 2-1. And we battered them 2-1. What a game of football. And I still watch it now and again. And I can't believe how quick it was. And they say the game's got quicker. and how many goal mouth scrambles there was. Yeah. It was end to end, muddy pitch, people sliding into each other, everyone getting up. Someone, Robbo dislocated his shoulder, Brian Robson, tried to play on, dislocated shoulder, trying to put it in a sling, and he had to go off. But everybody just getting up and get on with it. Like there was a bit of, you know, bit of needle between players. But everyone was just like, get up and just get on with it. And after the game, shake hands, all go into the bar we've talked about.
Players bar.
We've got to ask about this. The old players bar at Upton Park, when it was the old West End, can you describe it for us? And what was a typical kind of, what would happen after games?
Well, the dressing room, at the back end of the dressing room, was you went through the toilets in the dressing room and the showers, and you go into a gym. That's where we warmed up, because we never
I thought you were going to say there was a fridge with beers in it.
A gym, Ginger. And honestly, it was like, it was not as big as this,
You're in the players' lounge now.
And that's where we used to train. That was the gym, like warm up before the game, put on our Dunlop green flashes that we all had hanging up on the wall. Yeah. Go in the gym, get warmed up.
What does that mean? You're getting warmed up?
Proper warm up, you know, your stretches and things like that. It wasn't as amateur as everybody thinks it was. These are powerful athletes we're talking about. Bonzo be block tackling the wall, and I've seen him nutting the door. He's like, Bonzo's a lunatic, you know what I mean? And then there was a door at the end of it. After the game, you walk through the gym and it was a players' bar. And before the game, whoever was captain or not playing, maybe you would go and give the opposition some passes. I'm sure it's the same.
Yeah, it's probably the same.
And they used to come into the bar afterwards and like
families or that, or just players?
All families and players. And it was brilliant. And Dixie weren't playing once. Norm, you know, the fat geezer after cheers, we called him Norm, didn't we? You know, so Norm's not playing one game, so he's in there playing with all our kids. You know what he's like, Norm. He just loves smashing balls about, didn't he? So I'm in the bar just after the game, and Norm hadn't played. My little boy's about six. He's come in. Julian's broke my wrist. I went, what are you talking about? Dixie smashing balls. He's trying to hit.
Foot.
He's lining all our children up against the wall, trying to smash balls at them.
And we've all seen him hit a ball as well.
And they all thought it. The kids thought it was funny, and Dixie did as well. And I just. Norm, what are you doing? Broke his wrist.
He actually did break his wrist.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, he didn't have a left foot on him.
Yeah, just
lovely geezer and all, Norm.
Yeah. How big was the players' lounge? We're in the current players' lounge at the London Stadium. How does it compare to this size wise?
About a third of this.
Wow.
Third of this, yeah. Blimey. But that made it good, you know.
Yeah.
You know, when Paul Ince came back when he played his first game, Man United, I remember Claire coming back, his wife, sitting with my family. And it was just really intimate, really good, really good. And there was never any ag between players.
Oh, really? So the away teams coming in as well?
Yeah, the away teams used to come in.
I sort of caught the back end of that. Like, certainly my Cardiff days, it was always both teams in the players' bar, families and all that. It was... good time after. Like you talk to the opposition about the game and what
would that
they
go
thought.
Through to the Premier League era? Is that still like 2006-7? Is it ended by then?
Probably a little bit. First time at West Ham, we used to come out of Upton Park straight across, and there was a bar there. Probably not so much the away team when I came to West Ham in those early days, but certainly all the boys would be in there with their family. Yeah. Yeah.
Did they come in here since we've been here? Did everyone come in here? The away team.
No, away team straight out of the dressing room on the bus now. I think that's pretty standard. I don't think there's much mingling after the game anymore like there used to be. Shame because you used to, like I said, you do know players in... I'm not a big fan of all the shirt swapping and hugging and all that, do you know what I mean, after a game on the cameras out there. But I did used to like coming in and speaking to the opposition and, you know, having a bit of a debrief, seeing what they thought. And...
is that why all the hugging and that is happening on the pitch, though? Because you don't get a chance to do it after...
We couldn't swap shirts, otherwise you wouldn't have had one.
Exactly. skins v kit. Brilliant.
I want to talk about one of the most infamous moments of your career, the sending off in the FA Cup semi-final 1991 against Nottingham Forest. I remember being a kid. Me and Ginger were talking about. I remember being a kid, being completely outraged watching this on telly. I watched it back yesterday with my modern eye.
I can't believe that.
And now I think that's a red, Ginger.
It's a red now.
Yeah,
it wasn't back then.
If that's going to VAR, Gary Crosby's.
Oh no, he's gone.
That's there was a different change. It was first of all, it was a professional foul, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Then it was denying a goal scoring opportunity. Then it was something else. Then it was something else. And it's something else all the way down.
I remember Paul Allen in the 1980 FA Cup final, wasn't he? He's through on goal, gets taken out, and the Arsenal defender gets a yellow. And you watch it and you think, what? Yeah. And then so this is 11 years later than that.
But to be the first recipient of it, the rule came out on the Wednesday. I get sent off on the Sunday. And there had been occasions in those games before, you know, after the, even from the Wednesday. And then all of a sudden, he wants to make a name for himself.
I was going to say, he's trying to make a shadow of a new doubt. Rules come in. He's trying to make a stand, isn't he? And
he did make a name for himself for the West Ham fans.
Yeah, I bet. Still talked about to this day.
Yeah. You mentioned your West Ham career comes to an end, and you have a testimonial the day after the last game of the season, Republic of Ireland, only 8,000 fans there. And you said you're forever in their debt. I was one of the 8,000.
Oh, thanks, mate. You don't want your money back.
Yes, please.
I do. I will be nicking a copy of the book. Yeah.
But
the payment.
That was the worst thing. A little bit, not bitter, but they could have done it at a better time, the testimonial. We played at home on a Saturday and my game's on the Sunday the next day.
Yeah.
So we get 30-odd thousand for Southampton. I think it was 3-3 we drew.
Yeah.
Tish got a late equaliser, free kick. And I have to play the next day. So that's 32,000 fans going to come back the next day. Yeah. So thanks, Chris.
I made the effort.
How much did you pay to get in?
That was quite a thing back in your time, though, Tom, wasn't it? The testimonial. Yeah. Did you not have one? Do I remember a story? You knew 11 in one seat. There was something. There was a stat.
Consecutive seasons. Testimonials. Yeah. So I can't remember them all, but Alvin, Dev, Parksy, Georgie Paris, Paul Hilton, me, Stevie Potts, Jeff Pike. I say there's more. It was like 10 consecutive testimonial seasons. And you don't. To give you a clue on the money kind of side of it, we did all different functions during the season and it was tax free because it was a testimonial. Mm. So you had golf dues, you had dues up the Grosvenor, the Lancaster, you had it here, there, and everywhere. Great. It's a great year. Dog nights, you know, the greyhounds. I think 106 grand was what I made for that year, the whole year.
And what year was that?
Year. 1933. 94.
Alvin actually had two testimonials. That's how long he was there.
Yeah, wow. Well, he deserved it, didn't he? I mean, staying all that time. You know, what a player he was. Yeah. What a player.
All right, West Ham fans, one way you can support Ironcast and help us rocket up the charts and beat off the competition from other official football clubs podcasts like Chelsea and like Spurs is to get a 5-star rating or review from you. Support me and Ginger on the podcast, chuck us a 5-star rating and review and help us rocket up the charts where West Ham belong, at the top of the table. Back on with the show. Your career has an unbelievable footnote to it. So you released from West Ham 1994, you're training with Barnet, and then you get a phone call to go join Kenny Dalglish's Blackburn Rovers, who will be challenging for the title. What an unbelievable story.
Well, that's luck. That's what I call luck. And when players win titles, there are players, you know, when you get other players like, you know, say Gary Neville playing for Man United, like, I think I could have played behind Ronaldo and David Beckham all my career. Do you know what I mean? And Kanchelskis and all that. Although Gary was a good player as well. But you're just in the right place at the right time. And you could grow up within a team, end up in a Premier League team, or you could get a lovely transfer at the right time and you're in it. And this all just happened. And Kevin Moran had retired, Republic of Ireland international. He was their most experienced player. I was 34, 35 at the time. And I was training at Barnet, as you said, just to keep fit. I'd offers to go America, Japan. And now you're thinking, oh no, I'm going to go down the leagues. Here we go. You know what I mean? Oh, I've got to do all this, you know, misses. Oh, I don't want to move and all that. But so all of a sudden I leave it and leave it and leave it. And in 2 weeks I'm planning, a mate of mine rung up playing this round robin non-league tournament. I went, can I play? And he went, you want to play Russ? You playing West Ham? I went, Wiltstone against Farnborough. So I go and play with Wiltstone. That's handy, 90 minutes fitness. Come off and then I get the call. Kenny get yourself
Kenny
up to
you
Parkhead. Yeah, we didn't have the mobile.
I was going to say, yeah.
The missus didn't even know it was because she didn't like football at the time. Yeah. And it was like, there's a Mr. Dogfish has rung, like, you know, and no, it's Kenny Dalglish. And Ray Harford, who's one of my first coaches at Fulham, he was the assistant manager. They didn't have a centre-back at the time. Can you get yourself up to playing a friendly against Celtic? Of course I can. Bomb. I played the next day after that Willstone game. And then they said, can you sign a contract for the year? And I was like, well, I might do. Yeah.
Can I have 5 minutes to think about it, please?
And our next game was at Wembley in the Charity Shield against Man United. You know, Canton RU's. You know, obviously I've been used to playing against all those players. But all of a sudden, I was the experienced player. The next oldest to me was Colin Hendry, 27. So we had a really young squad. Shearer was 23, Sutton was 21,
Sherwood
was 24.
Young Ian Pearce, another West Ham legend.
Yes, he played in the second half of the season. He was my mentor. Piercy, keep rubbing his head. Really nervous, Piercy, when he's like that. Great geezer, Piercy. But they were like my two little kids. Sutty and Piercy were staying at the hotel, and they were the Southern base players in that Blackburn team, along with Tim Sherwood. So we sort of, Sutty and Piercy always, they had a couple of young girlfriends at the time. And I was like, oh no, you know, driving me mad. What do we do? She's had a go at me, Tony. Oh, come on, boys, grow up.
Like a father.
And now I've got the girlfriends coming to me, like, I'm going, oh, he didn't mean it.
But also, in that pre-season for Blackburn, so you're playing at Willstone, you sign for Blackburn, then you play Barcelona in a pre-season for Blackburn alongside him, and I think you win 3-0.
3-1, I think. 3-1. They had to play 6 friendlies outside of the Nou Camp because they had to get to the provinces. So they beat a Man United in the European Cup at the time. You know, Hadji,
Romario.
I think
team.
Pep played. I'm not sure if Pep played as well. The butcher, Nadal, you know, the butcher of Barcelona at the back. So
of Barcelona.
Yeah, do you remember him, Miguel Nadal?
I don't think I do.
Proper.
I'm going to look him
proper centre back. Yeah, Miguel Nadal. So we're top of the league at Blackburn, but this is obviously a lucrative friendly. They have to play 6 friendlies out of the Nou Camp. So we think, oh, it's just going to be a friendly. We go over there. There's no training thing. We got a poxy journey over there, and I just want to get this game out of the way. Then we're in the hotel. And Colin Hendry's being rested for the game. So I'm playing with Piercy and I'm rooming with Piercy and he's going, rubbing his head. We can up against Romario tonight, aren't we? Oh, Piercy, just go to sleep. Just have 2 hours.
It's only a
friendly, anyway. But then, of course, we get the police escort to go to the ground. Piercy's like, I think he's going to play Romario. Anyway, we get to the ground and we get into the stadium an hour and a half before, 25,000. I can't remember where it was. Rammed to the rafters, singing the Barca song, you know, wow. Barca, yeah. Barca, Barca. Thought, hold on, this ain't going to be friendly.
It's not friendly today.
Anyway, there was a big row on the pitch. There was a fight in the tunnel. Jordy Cruyff, he got sent off. Yeah, Shearer got hat-trick. And because they were playing Spain, England were going to be playing Spain in the Euros, Alan decides he's going to lay a marker on Miguel Nadal.
He could have picked someone better. By
bang, he's done him. But Shearer got a couple of goals, or might have got the hat trick. We beat him, and it was a great day. And we had to have a police escort out the ground. And then we're back home to play at the weekend.
That's mad, isn't it?
But it wouldn't happen nowadays, would it?
Oh,
it wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
But Romario was playing, and Piercy, like, obviously, he was the lone striker, and he was. Most teams played with pairings then, but Barcelona are a little bit ahead.
Didn't need to with him.
And he's playing in between us, and he's going, I'll go in and mark him. It's Romario, sorry, it's Romario.
Was you like that at all? Think about players that you used to play against like the night before? I always tell a story, I tell it in the Q&As. And I was never one for thinking about players before a game, but Drogba, I say it when we
speak. Yeah, you said, didn't
you? Every time you used to play against Drogba, thinking... Yeah, this is going to be a tough afternoon. But did you have anything like that when you was playing, or you just
it was going to be tough? I wasn't frightened of anyone or anything like that, and sure you wasn't. But you knew but you kind of grew for that one, didn't you? Like, it was when you switch off, wasn't it? And then you get surprised by lesser players. But we were in an era where everyone had pairings up front: Rush and Dalglish, Wright and Smith, Lineker and Sharp. you know, and like you could name all the Cotty McAverney, all the pairings. And we had our hands full of centre backs. A lot of the time we were 2-on-2, but nowadays centre backs are in comfort land, aren't they? Yeah. Especially when you've got the ball, no pressure, passing it backwards and forwards between each other. We always had a little bit of pressure on us all the time. But you, if you wanted to play like Alvin and myself could play football at the back, you had to earn the right to play. So you had to stop them first and then play. But the pairings were brilliant. Drogba was your... Did he always have a good guy? He's your nemesis.
I've probably always had
Ginger,
a bad
I was looking for the word there. You're teaching me.
I'm sorry. Nemesis. Yeah, it's not like... I wouldn't say I was... like you're not scared, like you say, but it's just one of them. You know, you've probably had... I probably had 3 or 4 bad games and then he's in your head then, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? And it was always tough because one game, I think, right, it's Drogba. I try and give him a kick. And he might, you know, some of them melt, and you know, you have an easy game. But with Didier, he just had everything. Well, kick him, he'd like it. You'd get a bit.
Were a physical centre back, weren't you? So you would want to like that. Yeah. And he kind of invited that, like didn't it, he? Yeah. He didn't mind that. Yeah. One of the few sort of modern day players, like all our ones, like Mark Hughes was terrific. You know, like give it, took it. Mickey Arthur, who I was speaking about. Give it, took it. But he was rare then, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Really. But he had everything, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Talking about strikers, and obviously we talked about it, you played with him. Alan Shearer, one of the best
The best. Yeah. Sorry, Tone. Sorry, Frank. but the best, yeah. And he had a proper good attitude about him. Mm. You know, you'd be in tunnels, Gannag, you know, against Man United, and you could see the opposition want to talk to him, and he was like,
really,
you know, bang.
Yeah.
And he was like, I remember playing Liverpool and Ruddock was playing and he was his mate. He was Alan's mate. And he kept digging Alan, like, you know, coming through from behind. And I was like that. And then Ruddock fell on the floor and Alan was going down the channel, and he just trod all over Ruddock. Yeah. He was going down like, but he said two best mates and they were both, you know what I mean? Like that. But it was, Shearer was top. I mean, you must have played against
him. Played against him late on, Newcastle, yeah. Still then, he was still the same then.
Couldn't really run as much then, could he?
We played at Upton Park. Quick Shearer story. We played at Upton Park. It was Shearer and Owen up front. Remember it. We lost 4-1. Michael Owen got a hat-trick. Alan Shearer was the best player on the pitch by a mile. Didn't score a goal. Just the stuff he was doing. He wasn't big, was he?
No, really.
But he was just strong. He could edit. He'd get up. He was just... Yeah, we lost 4-1 and he was the best player on the pitch by an absolute mile. And Owen scored a hat-trick.
He was a bit like Teddy. They had that ability to hang in the air.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to explain to like people, like when you're playing against the top players, David Speedy was another one. And like sometimes, you know, you just got to watch the ball, haven't you? Yeah. But when they jump before you and you tend to go, oh, you got to jump. And they just could have, I don't know how they've done it. And none of them can explain it, but they could hang. And you think...
Sparky was the same.
And you're on your way down and they're still going up. But Alan could shape his headers as well. Like he could get... Balls came in from the left or the right and he could get a shape on a header.
I think he'd done one against me that game I'm talking about, the 4-1. I think Al did one where he's... I'm gone up for a header with him. He's flicked it on and got on the end of his own flick on. So it does say a lot about my pace, to be honest, because Al was probably 36 at the time. But he was just... Yeah.
He was brilliant. As not many of them could do it, like relieving pressure, you know, like because he'd run at the ball to accept it and you try and get tight and then he'd stop and you go straight into him, foul. You know, he was the best at that.
Master.
But having said that, Chris Sutton, who was his foil, what a good player he was as well.
What a partnership that was.
Yeah.
But and just quickly, you win the league at Blackburn, or like I say, a tremendous footnote to your career. But West Ham fans will be interested in the fact that obviously there's a lot of drama May 95. West Ham draw against Manchester United. Blackburn lose at Liverpool. But that draw that West Ham attained basically gives Blackburn the title. And I heard a rumour that you got the whole Blackburn dressing room at Anfield to give a chorus of bubbles.
Well, they deserved it, the boys, didn't they? I rung them up in the... I rung Bish up in the midweek, Ian Bishop. Oh. Good player, great lad. So I ring him up in midweek and they were already safe, West Ham, going into that Man United game. And I said, look, Bish, I said, do us a favour. You've got to really try against these because we got a difficult game at Anfield to try and get the title. And he went, I said, you've got to be on it, you lot. He went, Tom, we're on the beach.
I've heard players from that team tell me that week was so relaxed. Like,
didn't Big Ludo have the game of his life?
Oh, Ludo, yeah. Ludo.
Yeah.
It's every time I see Ludo now, he says, you should give me half that medal.
I bet he does. Right, or the bonus. Right,
and
half the
bonus. He ain't even got a sense of humour, Ludo. But that was really funny, you know? But I was just watching it on a monitor as I'm next to Kenny in the dugout because I was all tracksuited up watching the game in the dugout with Kenny and Ray. And they got the monitor from the West Ham game. Ludo's pulling off save after save. And I'm going, oh. Kenny keeps looking back like this, looking back. And they go, when you shut your mouth, you know, like concentrate. And I went, he's having a blinder, gaffer. He's having a blinder. Ludo's having a blinder. Save, you know. Then it got tense at the end, didn't it? And Jamie Redknapp scores a goal for Liverpool, beats us. Now we're depending on it. And then we hear the result and bang, the whole place erupted. And the Liverpool fans were pleased for us. Because they love Kenny. They don't like Man United. Yeah. And they stayed for our lap of honour, cheering us. And it was brilliant. And it showed the honesty of the Premier League that West Ham could draw, saved us, and Liverpool beat us, that would have turned it over for Man United. So it's the honesty of the Premier League, isn't it?
Yeah. Where'd you keep the medal? Have you still got it?
I lost it for about 3 months. Yeah,
After the celebrations, the first 3 months? Or
No, I went home, give it to my dad. I said, look after that for us. And it was in every cab shelter in London. He was taking it around. And I come back and I went, where's my medal? And I couldn't find it. And I went, you ain't got me medal, have you? And he went, yeah, I've got it. So I don't put it out on a
thing. A cupboard somewhere.
I went to get it valued.
Yeah?
I thought, not that I was going to sell it, because I went to get it cleaned. And it's crappy medal. It's like so disappointing. I go around Paul Parker's house. He's got like little replica Premier League trophies.
Ted's got the same for the trophy.
Mine one's a crappy little gold thing. So it got a bit dirty. So I took it down to jewellers. I went, couldn't clean that up for me, could you? And he went, that's a Premier League medal. I went, yeah. I said, do us a favour. Can you value it? And when I come in tomorrow. Not going to sell it.
Insurance purposes. About valuation.
Yeah, nodding a wink.
Yeah, you never know. So, go back the next day and I went, how much is it worth? He went, well, how much is it worth to you? And I went, well, it's worth a lot to me, but how much is it worth? And he went, nothing. I ain't even gold. No. It's just gold plated around the rim. So it's like just a normal medal. How fake's that? Yeah.
they should try and get them back, I think. Remake them for the old boys.
Yeah, I'd sooner have one of Paul's ones.
Teddy's.
What was Teddy's? Yeah, what's Teddy's?
He's obviously won the treble, the Champions League. His cabinet display was off the charts, still in the house. Oh. I've been around his house a couple of times after dinner, had a couple of wines and trying to get on his shoulders to get it out of the cabinet and that. But it's all there. It's incredible.
Dean Ashton says he's been around his house and he said, like when he first signed, he was like...
It's one of them. Ted's trophy. When he went to United... He won like player of the year, didn't he? He was late on, 36, I think he was, Ted. But everything in Ted, he's got everything in it. It's just unreal.
I played against Ted when he was at Millwall up front with Tony Cascarino. And when he was at Nottingham Forest and at Spurs, Man United. So, but what a bloke. I mean, obviously, Ginge played with
him.
Get him on. Yeah, we'll get him.
Lovely geezer.
Yeah. We're going to end, Tony, with some quick fire questions.
I'm
nervous.
Just want you to relax.
I'm good at that.
Whatever
not
comes
thinking.
Up.
Yeah.
Me and Colton are good at that.
All right. First question. Best moment in a West Ham shirt?
Oh, no. It would have been beating Ipswich. And we thought we were going to win it, take it into the we did take it into the last weekend. So beating Ipswich and it was one game to go, yeah.
Oh, wow. Is that 86?
Yeah.
Yeah. Favourite holiday destination?
Do you know, I've been all over the world, but I still love Tenerife. I still love Tenerife.
Yeah, that feels like a Tony Gale destination.
Yeah, it does.
Pound a pint.
Red Lion.
Pound a pint or go for a nice posh vodka and tonic over there, yeah.
Posh vodka and tonic.
That's coming from the man who's on holiday quite a lot at the minute as well, let me tell you.
You've always got a great tan tone, to be fair.
She wants to go everywhere, right? Oh, can't we go back to Tenerife?
I love it.
Which actor is playing you in the film of your life?
Ah. Oh. Which actor? It's got to be Robert Redford, isn't it?
Oh, nice.
A young Robert Redford. A young Robert Redford.
Yeah, he's got the tan.
Yeah.
Celebrity crush.
Oh, I used to love the lady out of Hill Street Blues. You don't remember her. Her name was Veronica Hemel. She was a darling. She was absolutely gorgeous, yeah. Okay. She was the police detective's wife. And she was a barrister as well, Veronica Hemel.
I can see a look of love in his eyes as he's telling that story.
Get all misty-eyed. Favorite cheat meal?
Cheat meal? Pie mash.
Oh, yeah. Lovely. All liquor or gravy?
Oh, no. Double. Double pie, double mash, double liquor.
I had it the weekend.
You can only listen to one musical artist for the rest of your life.
Who Stevie Wonder.
Oh, okay.
That
choice.
Was easy. That
great
was quick.
Choice. Was Stevie Wonder played a lot in the dressing room up to par? Do you have a ghetto blaster at up to par?
No, we didn't do all that. That'd drive me mad, all that stuff. Yeah. Well, I've had Frank Sinatra in there. We'd have all fell asleep.
I've done a few strange ones, to be fair. When I was playing, the boys putting music on, and I just wanted to put Johnny Cash on, but.
No, he's
a bit old school.
Johnny Cash or the Dubliners. Yeah. Nah, didn't go down well.
Well, Ring of Fire might have worked for you, Tony. But
yeah, after a curry.
Best film of all time.
Oh, I love it. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Brilliant. I've never seen that.
Have you not?
No. Oh, you got to watch that.
I'll add it to my list.
Or The Sting. Yeah, that was great.
Best friend in football?
Probably Dev.
Yeah.
Alan Devonshire, yeah.
It's nice, so, quickly, you boys from
and
back...
And Parksy, George.
Yeah, I was going to say, you boys from back then, you're all still really
and
close.
And Alvin.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Well, it is a small squad.
You're all still really close, because I've been going out and doing a few bits with the boys. They're all still so close from that time. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. It is wonderful. You're all in a WhatsApp chat together.
Oh, you're having a laugh. Dev wouldn't know how to do it.
Got a knock you.
Parksy, no. No, we bit old school. We ring each other up. Oh, okay. Have a chat, yeah.
Opponent from your playing days that you wouldn't want to run into again.
What do you mean by that?
Is there someone you used to play against?
Yeah, there was a geezer called Billy Whitehurst. He was proper hard.
What? Mick Harford as well, though, wasn't he?
Mick was hard as well. Mick was hard, but Billy was proper hard.
Really?
Yeah, proper hard.
Final question. Pomp. Tony Gale in his pomp. What's that? 86, would you say? What's peak Tony Gale? Arguably 95, to be fair.
No, probably 86. You're right.
86. How much is 1986 Tony Gale's worth in today's market? What price? What value?
I should let other people judge that. That's
all right. Well, he falls on Ginge then.
Ginge wouldn't have even seen me.
I'd go 1.5 mil.
A week, yeah. You mean wages, Ginge?
Yeah. Where'd you put a number on it?
It's hard.
I think hard work on yourself. Pop centre back, ball playing. I'm going to say 20 mil, 25.
More than that.
Yeah, I would have gone more.
More?
Well, I'm better than Zuma. better than Ogbonna. Better than Aguirre. What are they on?
30 mil, I'd go.
30 mil, yeah.
I'll give Michelle. About 80 mil.
80? Right.
Depends where we're going.
Yeah, exactly. Tony, it's been a pleasure chatting with
Brilliant,
you. The
Tom.
Book is Tony Gale, That's Entertainment. Unbelievably, your first autobiography. All the stories are in there. It's a cracking read. Are you going to be doing some signed copies? Can anyone come out and get a signed one?
Yeah, I'm going out and about doing it around. Don't know when this is going out, but I'm going out and around everywhere. So, yeah. And it's good because you bump into all the fans as well. It's good.
It'd be a great read.
Brilliant.
Though.
It's a cracking read.
Can you read it?
Can you read?
Some great pictures in it.
A bit
as well.
Better than Coley.
I'll tell you all the stories.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you for all the memories, Tony Gale.
Thanks for your time, Chris and
Brilliant,
Ginge.
Tom. Brilliant.
Lovely.
And you lot.
Podcast Network.